everybody. Welcome to the Hallmarkies podcast. I'm so excited today to bring you our latest episode. We are talking about mystery shows today, particularly the two new pilots that aired in January. And we're also going to talk a little bit about Garage Sale Mysteries just as a point of comparison. I'm Rachel, and I'm so excited today for a very special guest to have on the podcast. We are having my dear old dad is here on the podcast. This is so exciting.
Hello, Rachel. Thanks for having me, and I look forward to it. I think it'll be fun.
Yes, thank you so much. I've mentioned you a little bit on the podcast so often, particularly whenever there's anything about camping or the outdoors or anything like that. I'll usually bring you up a little bit. But why don't you take this chance to introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about you.
Well, I live just up the hill from you in Draper, Utah, and I'm a very active outdoorsy person, as you've alluded to. Right now, passionately skiing here at our Utah resorts where we have phenomenal amounts of snow this year, which has been wonderful. I like a lot of other outdoor activities, and as you know, I'm not a very avid TV or movie person. I tend to be engaged in things where physical activity dominates, and when I'm watching TV, most of the time it's NBA games while I exercise. In fact, I stopped exercise during a game right now in order to do this show. So I'm kind of, when it comes to TV and movies, I'm kind of raw meat, I guess.
Yeah.
So if you want a perspective from someone who's at the opposite end of the spectrum from you in terms of engagement with those mediums, then that's me.
Would you say that was always the case, or when you were younger, did you know, like TV, did you grow up watching any shows or movies, or were you just never that into it?
Oh, well, when I was a child, I watched quite a few shows. We watched shows as a family. We watched The Wonderful World of Disney, watched crazy shows like The Beverly Hillbillies. That starts to date me. I'm just about to turn 64. The Man from U.N.C.L.E., The Wild Wild West, Mission Impossible, Star Trek, and, you know, cartoons. So, no, it was a way more common in my family. I don't know why, as I matured and we started our family, why I didn't continue to watch TV. But I do know why. I mean, the reality is the internet has had a big influence on me. I was an early adopter of the internet, very early.
Yeah, that's true.
And I haven't taken a newspaper, subscribed to a newspaper for forever. I haven't watched hardly any local TV news broadcasts forever because it's not because I'm not interested in news. I just turned to the internet pretty much for everything. And so I think that had, and now of course, the TV, video, internet delivery have all merged together.
Yeah.
In fact, I just posted a YouTube video yesterday of me skiing that you'll have to watch.
Yeah, we'll put a link down in the description.
Very exciting. Yeah.
Check it out. Yeah, it's an interesting thing. I mean, because it's easier than ever to become a content creator now, whereas, you know, that was obviously much more difficult back in the day. But yeah, I think it's interesting, given your interest in photography, that that sort of film as a medium never interests you more than, you know, more than it did.
Yeah, that's actually an interesting point, because back in the early 70s when I, well, even the very late 60s when I started as a teenager to get deeply involved in photography, my dad wasn't very supportive of me at that point because he was quite smitten with Super 8, which was the first really sensible consumer option for making videos. And he bought a Super 8 camera and a Super 8 projector, and he really got into it. And he told me that the future was in movies and video. Well, we didn't call it video then, but in movies.
Right, right.
And he was right to some degree. Ironically, as you know, he got heavily into still photography as well. But yeah, I'm starting to do a little more with that because today's still cameras have incredible, some of them have incredible video capabilities.
Right.
And yeah. We were just up playing around with that skiing. But as you know, your older brother is a really good videographer as well as a photographer.
Right, right. Yeah, interesting. Yeah, so the one show that I remember you watching was the mystery show on PBS, particularly the Sherlock Holmes with Jeremy Brett.
Right.
That aired. I mean, that's practically the only one that I remember you, aside from maybe like sports or General Conference, the only things that I really remember you like putting in and making sure you had videotaped so that you could watch it.
Right.
Kind of a thing. I can't, the main, I guess if you're saying media memories that I have that I immediately associate with you is Jungle Book and Robin Hood. I immediately think of you. And I think of you with Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah, I think as far as the series goes, you know, I do love the Sherlock Holmes series. I think Jeremy Brett is the quintessential Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah.
I think he was a phenomenal actor. I know he was completely immersed in the role, almost to a point of being psychologically troublesome for him, I think. Mm-hmm. I have all those ripped onto a hard drive now. I haven't watched one for a while. I mean, I do have some favorite movies and shows, but my threshold for engagement is pretty high. And I see through things, I think, rather quickly when they're not good. Mm. And so what time I devote to these sorts of things, I want it to be, you know, a really, really good production.
Yeah. I also think of you when I think of Breaking Away and It's a Wonderful Life. Like if someone were to ask me what are my dad's two favorite movies, I would probably say those are your two favorite movies.
Now it's Lord of the Rings. There's no, Lord of the Rings. Nothing for me even comes close. Mm-hmm. And you know, I watched them in German because I'm a student of German and they did a phenomenal job and the voiceover work is just amazing. Yeah. So it's a learning experience too. But I think Lord of the Rings is the, in all respects from anything I've seen, the greatest movie series I've ever seen. Yeah. Every part of it I think is just top drawer.
Yeah. It's really great. I enjoy it very much. And I'm not a big into fantasy, but it won me over. I don't really like the Hobbit movies at all, but right. I do like those Lord of the Rings. Have you ever listened to or watched the Robin Hood in German?
You mean the cartoon?
Yeah.
Or I do have it. It's harder to follow. I think it doesn't have the in my opinion, the English original has some of the best voice work, if not the best voice work of any cartoon I've ever watched. It's just an amazing group of voices.
Yeah.
And it doesn't carry over in German that way, not like Lord of the Rings does.
Because Peter Ustinov, the only reason I mention it, Peter Ustinov, who did Prince John, did the German voiceover.
Oh, really?
That'd
be interesting. I'll go back and listen to it.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure at least that that's the case. Anyway, so that's really interesting just the different things that people are drawn to. And one thing that's just amazing now is there's just so much out there. It's amazing. There's just so, like, I mean, I don't know. It seemed like in the past, you know, you had your main network shows and then a few people had the premium shows. So there were like a few shows that everybody was talking about for the most part. But now, I mean, there's almost a day doesn't go by where somebody says, are you watching this? Are you watching this? And I'm like, I can't watch it all. There's so much. And so anyway, it's just interesting. We have this little niche here as far as Hallmark. And so you got to see these three mystery pilots, basically. And what in your mind would you say makes for a good mystery?
Well, I'm not an expert on mystery motifs, but I mean, obviously the suspense or the whodunit not being obvious and being difficult to discern and a surprise in the end.
Yeah.
And, you know, with the Sherlock Holmes, it's the uncanny intellectual ability to solve the problem from evidence that no one else could put together and, and end up coming up with a conclusion. While you're watching it, when it's a good one, you're not figuring it out, and he is.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's what makes it fun in the end, is it's a surprise.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting with Sherlock Holmes because, like, when you really kind of parse it down, he's not a very likable character, but because he's kind of a superhero just with his brain.
Right.
And so that makes him intriguing to watch.
He's an intellectual eccentric. And that's why I like Jeremy Brett stretches that to the limits.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, the eccentric nature. And I think he does it in a just a remarkable manner.
Anyway, well, let's dive in. I have these kind of, and this can be very spoiler filled. So if you don't want to know who the murderer is and all that fun stuff, these don't listen any further because we're going to talk it all out. So like I said, we have three that we're going to talk about, and I have them kind of divided up into murderer, victim, what I call family fun. And that's just sort of the secondary characters, other things, and the red herrings. So we'll just talk briefly about each of these three. And so the first one we're going to talk about is the original pilot for Garage Sale Mysteries. This goes all the way back to 2013. So this was the very beginning of Hallmark Channel, Hallmark Mysteries. And they had done a couple others. The Jane Does had been before that, but this pilot is actually quite different than the rest of the series. So it's a little bit, if somebody hadn't seen it before and had just seen the later ones, it was a little jarring for me, because the whole cast except for Sarah Strange, who's her friend at the store, and Jennifer Shannon, Lori Loughlin, everybody else is different in the subsequent movies. Like all her family's all different and all that stuff. So that's a little bit interesting, but this stars Lori Loughlin as Jennifer Shannon, and she is a antiques dealer. She has a store, Rags to Riches. And as she is out finding these antiques, she stumbles upon crime, and she has an ability to notice details, kind of like Sherlock Holmes does. And I like the way that the camera kind of will demonstrate her sort of noticing a particular detail here, a particular detail there that the detectives aren't noticing. I think they do a pretty good job with that. And so this particular case has Jennifer notices that several rich houses are robbed right after they have garage sales, including one woman who ends up dead, apparently from accidentally falling down the stairs. But Jennifer suspects foul play. She convinces Detective Adam Iverson to accompany her to some garage sales, and they do, and they do turn up some suspects for the robberies, but no evidence emerges for the murder. Jennifer eventually finds the murderer and delves into the case more. So that's sort of your base summary there. But overall, what was your overall response to this film, would you say?
Well, one of the ways I've looked at this is, given that I don't watch much and I have a high threshold for interest, would I watch it again? Would I watch the next one? Or right. did it did the characters appeal to me, and the storyline and everything, the videography, in a manner that would get me to watch it again. And so on this one, I'd say I wouldn't probably watch it on my own, but I'd watch it with you and Mom. Again, I would take the time to watch another one.
Right.
And I thought, I mean, Jennifer is a very precocious, peppy, bright gal who is probably even smarter than her husband and smarter than the detective when it comes to these sort of things. I agree with you. They kind of did a zoom in, like micro focus.
Yeah.
As though her eyes were riveting on things. And so, you know, and I thought the gal who played her partner was quite good. Mm-hmm. And I thought in the end, it was not that, I mean, it wasn't that complex of a mystery as far as the whodunit part in the end. Uh-huh. But, you know, she was very precocious in her evidence gathering, even taking risks, probably illegal risks, and, you know, risks that threatened her own safety, you know, which makes it a little more exciting, gives a little more tension. So, and I'll say this is probably true of all these, that somebody dies, in this case, her kind of a loose friend, a friend that she's not super close to,
right,
but still a friend. And she gets over it really quick, the tragedy of it, you know, and is back on the case without, it's not like there's an enormous amount of mourning. And I think that's true in the other two as well. It's kind of like, okay, sorry that happened. Let's stay on the case.
Yeah. They've had 15 of these now, of the series. And I interviewed Sarah Strange, who is her friend at the store. And she was joking, you know, that you have to have a certain suspension of disbelief because nobody would live in this murdery town at this point.
Yeah. I mean, if somebody got murdered in a community of the wealth exhibited by the homes and all, this would be an unbelievable upset to the community. I mean, the community would be massively nervous and traumatized.
For sure.
But, you know, that's probably beyond the scope of something this short, you know, to develop that kind of dynamic.
It's similar to, you know, what you would get in something like a Murder, She Wrote or Columbo or that kind of a, you know, a series, kind of an idea. They had basically two red herrings in this one. There was an accident. That was the original, that she just fell. That was the original thing.
Well, yeah. And then the guys who broke the triple group that broke in.
Right.
And so they seem to be like the obvious culprits.
Right. So there's these robbers that steal this jade statue. They basically kind of, they got in there and they see that that there's, you know, this body. And so, but they're like, well, we want to take something. So they take the jade. But then, it wasn't the greatest obfuscation, I think, in the world.
That was pretty good because they were made out to be really creepy.
Yeah.
You know, and they were on the lam. And so, you know, you could easily consent to the idea that in the process of robbing, they got confronted and, you know.
Well, and you almost got the impression that Jennifer was better friends with the husband than with the wife. In a way, and so her sort of familiarity with him is a bit of a kind of throws you off a little bit from him being the murderer, but the husband ends up being the murderer, so it was very shocking.
So, and then they develop the other, in each one of these there's a detective who's arguably maybe not quite as bright as the gal involved, and then there's a tension, a professional tension between the detective and the amateur. And that tension varies between the three shows and how divisive or problematic it is. In this one, of course, it ends up in a very positive way with the love interest between the detective and the daughter.
Yeah.
Which is kind of charming. You know, I mean.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PI, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to. Podcasts on?
Yeah, podcast, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus? Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
It's a little bit, it's probably a little bit cliche, but it's, you know, you could see it coming all along, but it probably works for a Hallmark show.
I think that Groucho Mysteries, part of the reason why it really works is it balances what the family fun category really well. That I liked also in this, how you have Hannah and the detective, which was cute. But then you also have her son, Logan, getting her to play the video game to kind of clear her mind. And then her son later on helping her to be able to clear the flash drive so that she can find the files to be able to. And there's some sort of tension with that. And I think that's fun. And I like anything with her and Danny, the lady at the store, her friend. I think they have a nice dynamic. So I think they do a good job with that. I like the guy who ends up playing her husband in the rest of the series better than this guy. But it's, you know, it's fine. I just think they do a really good job with that family dynamic. And I think that Lori Loughlin is a pretty good actress. I think she does a good job.
Yeah. The husband is a pretty minor character. So it doesn't really matter. I mean, you sort of like, just be careful.
He
kind of roll his eyes, type of character.
All right. So if you were going to give this between a 1 and a 5, 1 you hated it, 5 was the greatest thing, what do you think you would give it as far as crowns? We do a crown rating.
Well, I'd probably give it a 3. Okay. I mean, I would enjoy, this could be fun to watch with granddaughters or, you know, kids, depending on your age. I mean, for me now it's granddaughters. You know, it's the kind of thing that they would probably enjoy together.
Yeah. So I would give it a 3.5. Around that, 3.5. All right. So let's talk about Ruby Herring Mysteries. This is Silent Witness. This is new pilot. And it stars Taylor Cole in their lead role as Ruby Herring. And it's while attending her sister's wedding at a resort in the mountains outside Seattle, TV consumer reporter Ruby Herring becomes involved in a murder mystery when an old family friend drowns under suspicious circumstances. Encouraged by her dad, legendary investigative crime reporter John Herring, Ruby conducts her own unorthodox investigation to the consternation of Jake Killian, the handsome by the book Seattle PD homicide detective assigned to the case. So what were your overall thoughts about this one?
Well, this one to me was the least compelling and was the one I would definitely not be drawn back to on my own. That's for sure. I wouldn't watch another episode for a couple of reasons. I thought, well, first, to have a plot where it involves people baking cakes and goodies and the person whose murdered's name is Sugar, That was a little, yeah. I mean, really pushed the limits of believability. And I struggled, I'm going to be honest, with the lead as Ruby Herring, in that her appearance, she had so much makeup. Now, I know actually it's true. Mom's pointed out, since I don't watch news reports, some of them are unbelievable in terms of the amount of makeup they have, you know. But she was so made up that to me, she almost seemed like physically like a mannequin. And I think it was over the top to me, which made it harder for me to kind of accept the idea that she's brilliant intellectually, but has this almost non-human appearance. I mean, just too good to be true look. And every aspect of it to me was more predictable, less believable, and less engaging than the other two.
Yeah. I agree with you. I think it had some positives, but I didn't really notice the makeup, to be completely honest. Maybe I just become accustomed to that style, but I did notice the terrible wig. I thought that it looked really bad, and I don't know. It was very distracting. I can't imagine a real reporter wearing that wig, and so that was the part of as far as her costuming that bothered me. And most of the people that I saw online didn't like the wig. It didn't work. And I like Taylor Cole as an actress, and she's really, it's interesting because she started out as a model, and some of her early Hallmark movies are pretty rough. But she's kept working at it, and her last couple have been really strong, and she's done a really good job. And I was hoping to love this, because I've really grown to really like her a lot, and she can be quite modern in her roles compared to some of the other queens of Hallmark, we like to say, in picking really independent and really really pretty forward thinking women. I like that she picks those roles, and so this was a little bit disappointing, I thought, from her. But I think some of the strengths, I guess, for me on this is I did think that they did a pretty good job with the red herrings, with the obfuscation. I think
that was pretty good. But
I think that particularly the rival baker Marion was a pretty convincing that she had a lot of motivation, and I think they did a pretty good job with that. It ended up being a different rival baker.
The idea that this rival baker, to just get a promotion in this business that was doing really well, would bump off and actually kill someone when she's not has no criminal background or anything, just so she could move up the further up to the top of the cake. In the end, kind of seemed kind of ridiculous. And
that's fair, but then those cake decorating world, it's pretty.
Oh, it's pretty violent. Yeah, that happens all the time. I also in this one, the tension between the professional detective and the reporter was, I think, too extreme. And then at the very end, then there's actually seems like it ends with a little romantic interest between them, which is part of the others in different ways. But it's, I liked that dynamic better in the other two shows as well, especially in the third one that we'll talk about next.
The only thing I like about the detective angle is I do think that Stephen Huszar, who plays that detective, I think he is very dreamy. He's probably, out of all these three movies, I think he is probably the most handsome of anybody.
Yeah, well, it's clear that apparently getting a job as a detective, you have to be handsome if these shows are any indication.
That's right. That's
right. Really handsome. That helps to solve crimes, apparently.
Yeah, I think so. And so, yes, that's right. So he was very dreamy to me, and he did a good job.
Well, I mean, as we've talked about, the way the casting's done, the stories, everything about it, says a lot about the who the target audience must be.
Sure.
You know, I mean, you can just tell by watching that, which there's nothing wrong with that. You know, they know who they're trying to attract. And clearly, I'd be stunned if it wasn't a predominantly female audience.
Yeah, you'd be surprised that there are more men than you'd think. A lot of them watch them with their, you know, with their wives.
I was going to say, their wives may force them to.
And then they just become in, you know, invested and enjoy it. We have more listeners to the podcast that are men than you would guess, but and we're grateful for all of you that are listening.
Yeah.
But yes, the predominant demographic is certainly like women 25 to 40, probably is the predominant demographic. But anyway, a lot of people online were kind of complaining about the fact that the guy who plays her dad looked so young.
Yeah.
And I think that might just be the fact that he looks young. I don't think he actually is, because he actually is Taylor Cole's real stepfather in real life, which is kind of crazy. But he does look, he looks basically the same age as the detective Stephen Huszar. He doesn't look like her dad, and he looked a lot younger than the woman playing her mom. And you know, whatever, people marry different people of different ages, so that's I guess fine. But I don't know, that was distracting to a lot of people I saw online. They didn't like that, but anyway,
a minor quibble. I mean, that wouldn't have been one of my major points of emphasis. So
I think the other kind of weakness I think to this movie is that the family fun part wasn't fun enough and wasn't as good as the Grosso mystery. Her sister and this wedding and her father and the whole idea of like the herring hunch. It was just, I don't know, it just wasn't as good as the other two.
No, and I'm glad I wasn't paying for the wedding.
Yeah, right. I think, like I said, I felt like there's some potential here. I think that they could easily sort of fix the things that weren't great and, you know, do a little bit of a better story. You don't want there, maybe not have the next one, the victim be named Sugar. And maybe in the next one, make it a little bit, I don't know, just make her a little bit better and just make it I think there's potential here.
Well, if you were to coax me or give me a profit motive to watch another one in this series, I mean, if it wasn't good for me, it'd be two strikes and I'm out, not three.
Right.
It just didn't have the power to draw me back. But
right. So I give it a generous 2 crowns. I feel like there's some potential. Like I said, I thought the obfuscation was pretty good, and I think Stephen Huszar is great. I like him. So I don't know, how many would you give it?
Well, I didn't know you could do half points. So
yeah,
I probably at like 1.5.
Okay, good. Okay, well, let's talk about Mystery 101. So this one was kind of fun for me because I got to I've interviewed both of the leads, plus I interviewed Preston Vanderslyth, who played played Bud, the student kind of TA character. Anyway,
right.
So it was just sort of fun to get to see it come to fruition after talking to all three people about it. And So this one, Mystery 101, the little summary of it is, Amy Winslow teaches mystery fiction at the college where she is a professor, but now real crime and real mysteries are erupting around her with the theft of a very valuable lab specimen, murder, a student's disappearance, and an apparent suicide. Detective Travis Cole of the local police is investigating, but Professor Winslow is determined to help. Her keen powers of observation and rapid deductive abilities may prove valuable if Detective Cole will only admit it. So, what was your overall thoughts about this one?
Well, in this one, Detective Cole came around a lot quicker to a partnership.
Yeah.
You know, so there's a little different dynamic that way. I thought Amy was the best actress of the three lead actresses. I thought she was the most authentic, if you will. And, you know, she was more convincing to me that she really was who she was, really was this teacher at the small college professor. And I liked her, and I thought that the story was good. The trouble I had with the story was that a couple of people die, a student, a professor. I actually know this from the real world at the University of Utah, where we tragically did have a student murdered last semester. And I mean, they shut down the university the next day. This has been a massively traumatic event. Whereas in this show, it's kind of like, it didn't seem to affect, even when her dearest friend, her departmental chair, died. I mean, she got over it incredibly quickly and back onto the case.
Right.
And so, I mean, in that sense, anything like this would be an absolute undoing of a small college and bring it to its knees, you know. Yeah. And yet life just went on. People are teaching their classes. And so that part of it I struggled with as far as the realism goes.
But
they did do a very good job on the red herring aspect. It was, I think it was pretty obtuse when it came to who the actual criminal was. They did weave in that secondary plot with the missing plant that was worth a ton of money and that other professor. So you had an additional whole criminal story going on. So this campus, this little college, should have been rocked to its core with all this crime going on suddenly. But, you know, again, I think developing all that's beyond the scope of this sort of show and how long it lasts and what have you.
Well, it's good to hear that you liked the actress who played Amy the best, because I kind of joke with her that she's my newfound cousin, because her last name is Wagner. She's Joe Wagner. So
I didn't know that when I watched it. So.
Yeah. So our cousin from Tennessee, she did a good job in the role. But anyway, so this, for me, I really enjoyed it. I thought it was really fun. But it had a lot of unique things. I mean, for two murders to take place, that's pretty unusual. And there were a couple other things that I thought made it sort of grittier than the typical mystery movie. I thought that whole sort of ending where he's having her drive and holding her up at gunpoint, that was pretty intense for this kind of movie, I thought. I mean, because there was no sign that anybody knew where she was, or like, it was getting pretty, I thought they did a pretty good job with tension. And because there's sometimes where it's just like, it's so obvious that this guy's just monologuing, you know, and the person's going to be saved. And that's one thing in Garage Sale Mysteries, is that Jennifer almost always can get the killer to start talking. And instead of just killing her, he's standing her up with a gun and explains the whole crime and how everything happened. But the fact that that whole scene driving, I thought, wow, like this is pretty intense, you know, pretty even maybe a little violent for Hallmark. And so I thought that was good. I liked that. I also, yeah, there were a lot of red herrings because you not only had, there's the first they thought that Rex's death was an accident. And then there was talk, so was it a suicide? Then you had the girl, her lipstick, you know, writing keep away on the,
right
on the thing. So you had that kind of red herring. Is it I think her name was Brittany. It turns out she's just sort of hacking and wanted the journalist Rex to lay off, but wasn't involved. And then you had the two professors, the Professor Morales, who had the plant get stolen, and she was kind of hostile, and there was, I was thinking, is she maybe involved? And then you had Professor McDonough, who had that fake paper that he wrote that they... Right,
plagiarism. Yeah, I forgot about that. That means that's another arguably criminal activity. Yeah. So you have a massive amount of crime going on this little campus.
You really do.
Yeah, I'm not sure I would want to send one of my kids to school there.
I don't think so.
Wherever it is, but...
Yeah. Yeah, I would at least avoid taking the criminal writing class. That's bad vibes, taking that class. I think you had some nice, I guess, family fun, I would say, in this. I think Amy and her dad, being the crime writer, was kind of a fun element.
Yeah, I think her dad was good.
Yeah, I liked it. And then also I liked the whole dynamic between his, the cop's assistant, I guess, the female, I think her name was Claire. And she started to get in kind of a relationship with Bud, the student from Amy's class.
Right.
And that was sort of fun, a little sort of side thing. And I feel like that is potential in future episodes to kind of keep going. And so all that worked. I mean, my only real flaw with this movie is I love Christopher Paloha. I think he's a good actor, but I felt like sometimes it felt like he was in another movie. He felt like he was in some like NYPD Blue, like gritty cop show or something. And I don't know, just something about his performance. I don't know, was just his accent and the things that he was sort of doing. It was, didn't quite feel like it was part of this. It felt a little weird to me. I don't know. The detective.
He was so good looking that he was sort of, for me, the male equivalent of Ruby Herring and the other one.
Interesting.
A little hard to imagine that a working detective is so suave and so...
I would say that, yeah. I think that Stephen Huszar is the most attractive, but...
Well, I don't know. I mean, who am I to say how good-looking a guy is?
But I don't know. I just felt like he was in sort of crime noir thing. Like, with some kind of grisly accent and down here in the underworld, we're investigating crime and... you don't want to hang out around Moe's shop, you know, kind of a thing.
Supposedly transferred from Chicago, I think.
Okay.
Or somewhere, you know, where it's, you know, serious crime.
Yeah.
But
and that was kind of thing. And so it was just, there was a little bit of a disconnect, I felt like, between his performance and the rest of the movie for me.
He actually, well, you know, I have a law degree, but I'm not an expert on criminal law, but he... I think seemed to fulfill his responsibilities and take her seriously when she had real evidence.
Yeah.
More. Whereas in the other ones, they're like, just leave us alone. Let us do our job. And then they came to false conclusions, you know, and then had to be enlightened, much to their dismay.
Yeah. That is true. Cause he was willing. He actually was like, okay, you are for this case. You are like a temporary
consultant. Yeah.
Yeah. Consultant. That's right. which they, I've never really seen them do in any of these mystery shows, because there's another one on this. Well, this will be actually, there was another one on this last Sunday, because this is going to air next week. There's another one that was on this last Sunday that's actually about an archaeology professor that gets involved in crime, called Emma Fielding. And usually the detectives are very irritated by the involvement. But I agree with you that he was actually like, sure, if you can be helpful, let's do it. He was better about that than most.
Well, I think it worked well between the two of them. To me, one of the biggest weaknesses of this is when it was all done.
Uh-huh.
And you think of what the guy who ended up, the maintenance guy who ended up being the criminal, that his motives were supposedly pure to help his son, but the whole scheme was absurd, you know, to get the plant, to somehow get the money to pay for the medical bills and then killing people in the process. I mean, it was kind of a real stretch to believe it in the end that something like that could actually happen. But, you know, I don't think that's the inherent in mysteries like this oftentimes, is that it's not a real world portrayal of a plan and a course of action. I mean, it's something very unusual, and that helps it be a mystery.
Yeah. Well, and in fairness, like, there's some pretty stupid criminals out there. So, or some pretty desperate. When you get desperate, you are a lot more likely to do stupid things, you know, and not really think it out, I think. So I bought that part of it. I was fine with it, but I do agree with you about the sort of the effects of murder on the school kind of thing. I do agree with you there. And but overall I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a very good little film. I wasn't bored watching it. Like some of these mysteries can be a little boring for me. And you could tell that Jill Wagner and Christopher Plow have been in two previous projects, including a whole nother series together. So they just have sort of natural chemistry, I think, between the two of them. And so I hope that they green light this and that they we get to see more of them, because I think it has a lot of potential and there's a pretty decent first act, I think, for them, a pretty decent pilot, I'd say.
Yeah, I think the trouble might be if it's still based at the university, or I mean, the college, you know, because that's where she's employed. Having more murders or more of these events at the college will, you know, become kind of absurd potentially.
Yeah. Yeah. You
know, so it might not be that venue setting may not work for multiple mysteries of this type, which almost always will involve a murder, I'm sure.
Yeah, it would definitely require a suspension of disbelief, that's for sure. I think for them. But I'd say I already know that the Garage Sale Mysteries just get better and better and better. So obviously greenlit that. And I would say greenlit, if I was an exec, I would say greenlit some more Mystery 101s. I think it has a lot of potential, and we got some just a couple comments on our Twitter about these that I thought I'd share. We have from Casey, our friend at Hallmark My Words. She says, I haven't seen the Garage Sale Mysteries pilot yet, but the Ruby Herring seemed super Nancy Drew to me, which I thought was fun. Loved 101. I think that's one of my top mystery shows now. So there you go. Michelle Benson, she says, Mystery 101 was fantastic. Chris and Jill's chemistry was off the charts. And I liked the mystery. Strong start. She thinks it's as good a start as the Aurora Tea Garden. That's another mystery show. And Garage Sale Mystery start. She says, I wasn't a big fan of Ruby. It was not a great mystery. And I didn't love the setting. And the wig was far too distracting. Then Caroline Richardson says, Mystery 101 was so good. Paloha and Jill were the dream team. The mystery was good, and they actually have a reason to be investigating. I need 20 more movies. Grouchel Mystery and Aurora are my other two favorite mystery series. And then Valerie Spencer, a true Hallmark fan, she says, more Ruby Herring and Mystery 101 are needed. Love both of them. Also love Grouchel Mysteries. Also love Aurora Tea Garden. So she's a big fan. And then Moments with Mercy, she says, I haven't seen Ruby Herring yet, but I've seen the other two. Mystery 101 was definitely my favorite. Hoping Hallmark does many more of those. So,
well, good. Seems like we're aligned on the 101 being the best.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. For sure. I think so. So there you go. That's some of our Twitter friends. And so, yeah, I would give this one, I'm going to give it 4 crowns. I thought it did a really good job at doing what it was trying, accomplishing what it was trying to do. Maybe not perfect, but pretty good. I liked it.
Yeah, I'll do the same. I mean, I'm not comparing it to, I'm comparing them one to another in the context of what, yes, I'm starting to understand as the Hallmark approach. And, you know, I would, given what I gave the others, I'd give this a 4 for sure.
Yeah, definitely. Very good. Very good. Well, maybe if they do another one, we'll have to have you on for, there's actually a new series that's also starting called the Chronicle Mysteries that I'm very excited. That's all about a podcaster that investigates crime.
There you go.
Yeah.
That hits you right at home.
Yeah, that's right. So I'm very looking forward to that. That starts in this upcoming weekend is when the first one will air. So that will be fun. And so this has been really fun. I really appreciate you coming on and talking about these with me and getting everybody to get introduced to you on the podcast. This was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I've had fun too. So I'm willing to watch another couple shows and see how it goes if you want.
Woohoo! We did it. This is so cool. Okay, great. Well, thank you very much. I really appreciate it. And yeah, you guys, make sure you're following the podcast at Hallmark News Pod, all of our social media. If you can give us your ratings and reviews on iTunes, it really helps us out. We really appreciate that. If you're watching on YouTube, then give us a thumbs up. That's very helpful too. And yeah, you can find us on all of our social media at Hallmark News Pod. And we try to post every single day, and we try to live tweet every single one of the movies, and we're having a great fun doing that. This weekend, we have the new Lacey Chabert movie, Love, Romance, and Chocolates, just in time for post-Valentine's. It's very exciting. And then we also have that first Chronicle Mystery coming up. So a lot of fun stuff coming up on Hallmark Channel and that we're looking forward to covering. And we should also have an interview with Peter Benson coming up, which I'm very excited about. So look forward to that. And so, yeah, just let us know what your thoughts were, how many crowns you would give each one of these. We'd love to hear in the comment section or on Twitter. And you can follow me, Rachel's Reviews, all over social media. And I'm also on iTunes and YouTube. I've recently just been finished covering all of 25 films that I saw at Sundance Film Festival. So you can check that out over on my channel and my blog. I really appreciate all of that support. And thanks again, Dad. I really appreciate it. And we'll talk again soon.
Okay, my pleasure.
Okay, bye.
Bye.